My name is Daniel Corday. I'm the chairman of AGES, which is an association of global event suppliers, started just 2 years ago, which unifies about 50 event suppliers worldwide, providing services to the industry. Before that, I was an executive director at Nestlé, one of these members of AGES and an internationally recognized event supplier too. Throughout these years, event infrastructure was increased tremendously with the challenges, parallel to the challenges then of the requirements and the sports federation, security, media sponsors, and other stakeholders. Designing and building infrastructure, smart and cost-effective, is becoming a major challenge. Facing political pressure, limited funds, digitalization, and other events even more. In the panel, we would like to discuss this subject and share our observations with you, the observations, the trends in the industry, to find out how successful hosts can plan their venues. Let me introduce the panelists, starting with ladies first, if you like. Soad Islam is the senior associate at Populous, working out of London. Soad graduated from Kingston University with a BA degree in architecture and a diploma in architectural design. In 2007, she became part of the design team of Sir Chris Hoy Velodrome and the National Indoor Sports Arena, with the responsibility to develop detailed projected overlay potential with regard to the 2014 Commonwealth Games in Glasgow. 2009, she joined London 2012 Olympic overlay team as a lead architect for the design of several temporary venues. And finally, she was the project architect and lead consultant for three major venues for the inaugural Baku European Games. We have David in the center, David De Beer. He's head of global events at Agreco. David joined Agreco in Belgium in 1999. He now leads the global event team within Agreco, providing power and temporary control solution to a wide range of event customers around the globe. David has a strong knowledge of the events market and is experienced in all aspects of the event cycle. He's been responsible for delivering some of the biggest events for Agreco over the last several years, incorporating Olympic Games, World Championships, and more. Last but not least, to my left, to your right, Mark Breitenmoser. He is head of strategy at Nestlé Group out of Switzerland. Mark joined Nestlé as the head of tendering in 2009, being responsible for the entire tendering process for major events such as the Commonwealth Games in Delhi or Olympic Games in London and Sochi. He also served as the project director for the temporary IBC at the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow. Ah, that's why you know about the whiskey yesterday. And other large events. In July 2016, Mark became head of strategy at the headquarters of Nestlé. He holds an executive master in business administration from the Zurich University of Applied Science. This is a great panel with lots of experience. And so let me ask you a first question to all of you. So what makes it so difficult then for event organizers to design and build sustainable event infrastructure? What's the secret about it? What's the challenges? You want to start first?
Shall I start? Well, I think one of the challenges is actually creating a team that's got an aligned goal. I think from an architecture point of view, there are so many different consultants that we work with, that we feed off. It's like putting together the team from the earliest point so that you're discussing the fundamental starting points together, like things like transport, security, media, energy. When you're all sort of aligned and you've picked a team that has individual knowledge but actually can bring it together, that feeds off each other, then when, as you go forward, you have less iterations, less changes, and there's always changes, but when they come, you go at them together, and you know why that they're being altered and that it all feeds off each other, so it isn't reinvented every single time. And then there's that sort of the level of trust of actually believing that you know, the people that you're working with actually really do know what they're doing, and that you actually trust that they will sort of give you the scope to do your job, that you will trust their job, and then it does align towards the end.
David, what's your opinion about that?
I think if we talk about temporary infrastructure, you need to make a difference between the sectors. So we all know that cultural music are very far in that. Repetitive national events are using our industry a lot every year. And all of that is temporary. When we go to the new cities and the multi events, it becomes a bit more difficult. The big discussion then goes with legacy and sustainability, and everybody has his point of view about what that should be. What we think is that, well, it's very simple. You need to have a strategic plan, which comes back to a lot. And then once you have that, you have to stick with it. Don't make it bigger than it needs to be in your country. Look at your country, look at the kids, look what's coming up in sports, in venues. And everything else, just go to the industry. What we call the overlay industry, can build anything what you want. In the big cities of Europe, the States, it's all Australia, it's all well embedded. In the new countries where there is still all this infrastructure to build, well, we have some challenges to convince to also look at temporary. And that's where, well, I think our future is to continue that work, to make the right balance also in these new countries between fixed and temporary.
Sure, thank you. Mark, how you look at that?
It depends really if you face an experienced organizing committee or a new organization. Sometimes you come to a country, they like to have a target to host a major event, but they doesn't know the industry and what they can deliver. They always think in the first time in a permanent building and not in a way how we can make it smart, using existing facilities, refurbishing existing facilities, and adapt existing facilities or convert them to an event location, and add then a temporary overlay over it to have the best benefit out of it. So it is always, when you go into such discussions, it's the early engagement is very important, that to show them the latest experience, long-term experience, how other cities have handled this delivery of such an event, and support them with clever solutions, what is fitted to them. So it's not always the same solution you're looking for. You have to be innovative to also adapt your structures, your delivery to the host city.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Well, it brings me to a question to you, Soad. You're working for the Paris 2024 bid. So how do you experience that in the process of developing the concept? Because what we just heard, you know, about what should be observed from the city just to get there to a sustainable infrastructure concept. Can you tell us a bit about that?
The first element is to establish a strong legacy, and then that which informs all of the design decisions. Because rather than just having an event that's swept away at the end of it, it becomes the first phase of construction. It's the thing that leads to the end goal. And then, you know, from the shop floor, it's like making simple, clear design decisions that link back to that original goal. And that's, you know, to make appropriate choices so that for the venue business development, so the vision of the venue in the future, an appropriate strategic fit for the sport being hosted there, and then to appropriate decisions for the identity of the games that they take place to express their character within the city that's hosting it. I think, for example, like one of not Paris, but one of the ways is the Super Bowl, which is a yearly an event, but it has a very, very strong character and a brand itself, and that goes from stadium to stadium to stadium. And by choosing to design the overlay with the right mix of character, with the right context of commercials, of sponsors, of the way that media use it, the way that spectators and crowd control is used around there, how it's experienced both live and sort of at home, that they can create that same feel in every stadium that hosts it. And even when you bring it to other countries, you still have that NFL experience. You're still going to something of that the same brand, the same feel. And it's you know, choosing and choreographing the right mix of elements that you can keep that character and unfold it again and again.
Thank you. So just coming back to Paris, just out of curiosity, because you know, I wonder how the process is to select the venue, to get at the end a really sustainable concept, because there's usually politicians working there, there's a mix of other stakeholders having their interest in hosting a venue or not. And so what is the, how does that work on? How does the selection of this venue, how does that go?
I think the sort of existing venue, temporary venue, it's not as definitive as that anymore. There's a lot of gray area, the sort of blurring of, I mean, now when we appraise an existing venue, it isn't just to see the sort of the simple capacity and things like that. It's all the embodied capacity, you know, ability that stadium has, the flexibility we can bring to it, what else it can do and what we can leave for it to have. I mean, I think a lot of the times when you think about existing stadiums and overlay, it's about making things bigger, but actually you can make things a lot more smaller and a lot more intimate. You can make, you know, huge stadiums into tiny, small, intimate venues, which again support smaller federations and allow smaller events to take part in grand settings and allow them to sort of ride on the back of that, but it still keeps that original character. And so, you know, you sort of, there's all kind of grades between also temporary doesn't have to be swept away. They can leave significant parts that are permanent, that are, you know, the first stepping stones towards what potentially could be on that site. So it's really sort of measuring what exactly is appropriate for the use of that local area. Also, you know, for the stakeholders involved, that you're giving back to, you know, to them what is in tune with their community ideas.
Thank you. So, David, a question for you. Well, we know about the increasing importance of event infrastructure and the temporary component. Are we at the beginning of a temporary infrastructure revolution? What will empower that?
If you would have asked me that after London, I would have said yes. The whole industry was, yeah. Now we really have found the balance between temporary and fixed. After that, it became a bit more up and down. I think the presentation of Paris yesterday showed also something new, is that it's not all about the stadium anymore. If you saw in the presentation of Paris, it was all about the fun park and the people engaging and which you cannot all bring into a stadium. So that for the temporary overlay industry is a big thing, because that is really what we do. When I refer back to what we do every year on festivals or cities or cultural events, that's installing that temporary venue just for a period. Yeah, in with the venues it's a bit more difficult. We try to go as early as we can. We try to engage as early as we can. We work together with the industries working together, fixed and. But then it's up at the end. It's up to the idea and the philosophy and the strategy of the organization, the association or the federation, to decide. We only think all that just built for your strategy and your fit and your future, and all the rest go temporary for that one of events with all the stakeholders you will not see again for the next 20 years in your country. So yeah, that is a bit, so is that a revolution? I think it's more embedded than before, but there is still space to do better, yeah.
Always good to have a future.
Yeah.
Mark, in a conversation earlier, you mentioned about the framework, you know, to get a target-orientated venue, to have a fit-for-purpose venue. You need to set the stage properly, regulatory framework and other conditions. So can you explain a little bit more what you mean with that? What is necessary as a ground condition to at the end get a perfect smart infrastructure solution?
As earlier mentioned by my colleagues beside me, it's something when you start to develop a project, you have to involve the right people at the right point of time. So it's also important what is the legacy of the infrastructure you want to go build. And there are different aspects to have in place. When you look at the venue like we did for a temporary theater in Bern. You have the public, you have the politicians, you have to consider this, you have all the permits you have to fulfill at the end, and then you have to start a discussion, where are the flexibility in these conditions that might another structure can put in place then with a permanent aspect. So that the temporary building gets more and more to a building which fulfills almost permanent conditions, but still has a temporary legacy. So it can be removed, it can be replaced, it's flexible, you can reinstall in different configurations and anywhere. So it's not a temporary structure you built once for this event only. So that you can also think about the legacy of your material you're going to invest for this particular project, that it also can be reused, that the legacy also is fulfilled, and the sustainability of the material afterwards. So not only think of this one particular venue or event, use the knowledge out of the industry and involve the right people to get the flexibility to the permits to fulfill such venues.
Thank you for that statement. So, what are your observations? I understand what you say that if you raise the bar very high for a temporary building and you incorporate everything in there, and all the expectations of the stakeholders, and at the end you have a perfect building, which is actually is losing a little bit his character of a temporary one. So this also has to do with costs. At the end, this so-called temporary building would probably cost maybe even more than the permanent one. So what is the, I would say, the advice you would give to a future venue operator or a project owner? What should he observe?
He should observe what is the requirements which you have to fulfill by law or by other things, and what is the comfort zone which you want to give for the spectators. Must be this a big seat or a small seat, or can be something between, or something we have already industry available. So that you can make a cost-effective solution. Maybe also the combination of a permanent building construction combined with temporary one. So you use a scaffolding structure at the base and only covering with a nice facade that you have to look for a nice building or venue. So the combination of a temporary solution which is already in the market combined with a clever solution, maybe covering, give another look, give another feeling to the venue.
Thank you, Mark. David, I want to come back to your statement about engaging suppliers. So there are, I guess, organizers, governmental bodies, or brand owners here in the room. How shall they engage with the industry? What are the role models? How can the industry give its best for a project?
Well, I took it like that, but I was reconforted by what David Gravenberg said yesterday. It's all about integration. If you are not integrating with the overall industry, I think, well, major events are almost dead. And he said it yesterday very clearly. There is a world of knowledge in this industry, which passes from games to games, even to festivals. It doesn't have to be big always. But we are really, and I can speak for my colleagues, we are really looking to downsize it to be sustainable. We in the temporary world, we try to give the best solution fitted for the organizers. And more, and in Agreco we have now, we are quite proud to have signed the Gold Coast Games 2 years in advance, which has never happened in Agreco, where we start with the organizer in making their design. So for the first time, a technical supplier is going to enter the committee and really start from point zero. And it's you're going to say, it's a very transparent. It needs to be transparent, obviously, when you integrate private and public. But it's really possible. And there are enough examples now in the market where this is happening. So I think the key word for the future is integration. It's doing it together and looking based on experience, on what happened, on taking the best lessons, also the worst lessons, and try and not to reinvent the wheel every time, because that is costing already a lot of money, and basically it has happened somewhere before. So I think integration of the industry is very, very important. Be one team, and like David said, it is the future, public and private together, to make this happen, because otherwise it's going to be very, very difficult. And I have good hope. If you look at 2024, I mean, we know that the three cities are working at very smart solutions in their candidature. So that's looking not too bad.
Thank you. Thank you, David. Suad, these two gentlemen are representative of the temporary event infrastructure suppliers. You're an architect, so you're at the other end, I would say, at the front end of developing infrastructure, designing infrastructure. Is there a conflict you have, or at the begin when you design a venue, between temporary, new, or permanent infrastructure? Is it because there are different ways to look at it? Every organizer need iconic venues. They also need cost-effective venues. So how do you deal with that?
I think we would be, as an architect, we'd be lead in coordinating the team. But I mean that we provide the design side that possibly looks into how to make to frame the event, how to make it iconic. But it doesn't work without complete collaboration with all of the other various consultants, without complete with transport, with security, feeding it, securing it, powering it, making sure that all the structures are safe and reliable. These are things that all play different parts. And though maybe we coordinate it more and we have a more front lead in that, it's certainly all taking on board all these different expertise and knowledge. And actually not being sort of not thinking that we really know everything about all these different expertise, as well as actually trusting that we change maybe the way that we design things, because there's other people who've done it in different ways in different cities and have learned from their experiences there, and that we actually do challenge what we think is the right way to do it, because we've got a good team and we trust in that. So yeah, there's all just different parts of the team, and it's coordinated potentially by the by the architect rather than led entirely by it.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's speak about knowledge transfer. I mean, these big iconic events take place in one city and 4 years later in another one. Some of the people are moving from one event to the other. Still, there's a huge challenge for the new organizers to deal with event infrastructure. So, question maybe to David. One always hear about these mistakes, you know, and the things missing. And actually, there should be a concept of knowledge transfer from one venue to the other. Looking at London 12 and the experience there was more or less completely missing in Rio. Maybe there were other circumstances there too. But what should be changed in your eyes? How can this huge knowledge and know-how be transferred from one event organizer to the other better than it is now?
It's a tricky question. We need to be careful. So we all know that indeed.
It stays in the room. Yeah. Nobody.
I believe that. If you, without being disrespectful, if you look at concerts or festivals, or even let's talk about Scotland golf tournaments, every year they are getting better and better because it's simple. It's the same location, same people, same suppliers. They work together to make it as efficient and cost-controlled as possible. If you go to the majors, you get every time organizing committees, you get different cultures, different politicians, different geopolitics, and everybody tries to reinvent the wheel every time based on what they won their event on. There is this official files from the IOC or from any association which gives the transfer, but very difficult. It's all in English, so you can have the cultures which have difficulty to understand it. So I, to be very honest, we can do our best, but we are the private sector, so it will always be seen a bit as a... So I think it's the responsibility of the associations, the federations, to I come back to that integration thing, to bring at a very early stage and at a very early integration stage the private together with the public and with the organizer in a completely transparent, because it needs to be transparent, obviously, way. And I think, Daniel, that's what we try with AGES also. It's that, yeah, we are engaged much more, and then that together with the transfer knowledge from the federations and the associations, yeah, we hope that certain mistakes from the past will be not repeated.
Thank you. About... sustainability, that's the subject we have, and there might be really a question about how sustainable temporary infrastructure is indeed. This requires a lot of material, of equipment being shipped from one place to the other. There is an ecological footprint also for that. Mark, are you sure that temporary infrastructure is really sustainable compared to permanent?
It depends on the systems.
So which system do you mean?
On the system, how it is developed and which material you use for the manufacturing. So you have there embedded energy which have been used. So to have there the return of investment, first of the cost, but also to... for the environmental impact you have in the manufacturing of these materials, you have really to design it that you can reuse it as much as possible, that it is flexible and can be used in different configurations. This makes temporary systems or structures sustainable at the end, because you can reuse it and reuse it again, other places, other locations. There is the transport. At some point, it waits off then. So, but when you only make a temporary infrastructure which you use once, then it might not work. Then there is also a legacy aspect of the venue. When you remove the temporary infrastructure, there is no binding cost afterwards for the running the existing venue, the permanent venue. So there is also an aspect that is temporary infrastructure is sustainable. It is also in the time of use, how long it is in place, what is the energy consumption during the use of the venue, how you can affect these ones. We see in the industry that there is innovation that is not a standard tank configuration, is not only on canvas anymore. There is insulated panels, insulated roof panels. So also we have their aspects. We can really develop the existing systems to another level that we have there as is more sustainable use of the structures. We can integrate renewable ideas with photovoltaic systems on the roof. So there is a movement we can go that we have more sustainable structures when we're running the event. I think this is a big opportunity we have here.
Good. Well, you're throwing a light into the future. That brings me to a question about the true innovations in the future. You were mentioning a few things, but what are organizers if they look forward to do the events, how can they benefit from the true innovations of the industry? And this is a question also for David. I mean, how is the temporary industry serving the market in 10 years? What would be true sustainable products?
I think Mark made the point already that everything is reused, so that is something which you cannot be more sustainable than that. I think being flexible, being quicker, being global, the world is getting smaller and smaller. Venues can move, temporary venues can move, can be reused. It's all about the look which you change. I'm a strong believer that temporary is sustainable, but only if you fit your fixed venues for legacy, then temporary is sustainable. If you want to do everything in temporary, that's not sustainable. If you do everything in permanent, that's not sustainable also. It's finding that right balance, but you need to have your strategy right. You have to have a long-term strategy, and then you just add temporary. And that, I think, is the future. And then smaller cities or cities in more difficult countries will be able to hold events. And as I said, I mean, the music industry, the cultural industry, they built stages on lakes. Everything is possible. You can go on the Red Square. You can use all the iconic. Well, you saw it with Paris. They are building a 100,000 thing on their most iconic place. So, and in a sustainable way. After 2 weeks, it's gone. You don't see anything anymore, and the grass is green. So, and Paris goes on, and there is a picnic on Sunday. So, yeah.
Thank you, David. So it's all about finding a smart mix of infrastructure typology, whether permanent, temporary, or new, actually doesn't matter. Every city has its own solution to deal with that. So taxpayers in here can look forward to some more legacy in the future if everything is being run this way. It brings me to getting some questions from you, because when we were preparing the panel, we thought we would like to have also an interaction with the audience, so we can really get down to your questions. So you've heard a few statements here about sustainability, technology, about the future. Are there any questions you would like to ask to the panelists in the audience? Well, then we maybe just a closing statement. That would be something you could we could do just to. And what is your wish? How things should develop? You as an architect, you as a supplier, what would be the ideal new project ahead of you? I mean, you know, Paris is a nice city, so you probably wish Paris to win.
Yes, very much so. But it's that going back again to the legacy strategy. And once you've really tied the event to that, then there isn't the start and end date aren't with the opening ceremony and closing ceremony. It starts with the first ideas of how that strategy could work, and it goes on and on into legacy. And suddenly you open that whole thing completely up, and then sustainability really starts to take a march.
Great. What's your dream, David?
My dream is, I think Africa could be, no, but I'm serious. I mean, it's time that something is going, something serious is going to Africa. It is possible with everything what we talked. So that would be one of the things that it's just possible for every city or every event organizer to have that dream to, in the near future, to organize something of a certain level, which gets the world to see their culture and that's, yeah, I think that's something which is possible in the future.
Nice. We'll look to Africa then. And Mark, your dream, your future?
As I come as a small country like Switzerland, I would also like to see the multi-city events again, more and more come up, that also small countries can combine forces and held a mega event together. And this would be also something which I would like to see in the future.
So the Olympic Games back in Switzerland, that's your dream?
Might. We can also include then Liechtenstein or Italy or parts of it. So it's more a region, not a country anymore, I would say then for that.
Thank you. Thank you for the panelists. I think they deserve an applause. I hope it was interesting for you.